The following is a listener-supported ministry from the Grace Evangelical Society.
Hello and happy Monday. Welcome to another week of Grace in Focus. I'm Lucas Kitchen with Grace Evangelical Society. Thank you so much for joining us. Now, before we move on, I'd like to tell you about our upcoming National Bible Conference. It is a great experience every year, and we would love to see you there. You can find out more about that by going to faithalone.org. Clicking on events. You can even register right there on the site. We look forward to seeing you there. Now, we're drawing toward the end of a series called The Ten Plagues of Egypt, and we're looking for a second time at the final plague, the death of the firstborns. Now, if you'd like to pick up the previous episode for this particular plague, you can do that by going to faithalone.org. And for that matter, if you'd like to listen to any of our backlogged episodes, they're all there for free. So take advantage of that. Well, let's go right to today's discussion with Dr. Bob Wilkin and Sean Lazar. And we're joined by special guest David Renfro. Here's Grace in Focus.
All right, welcome back to the show where we're concluding this series on the plagues of Egypt with David. David Renfro, thanks for being with us.
Good to be here.
So we were just started to talk about the 10th and final plague, the death of the firstborn, and what would be required for the Israelites to avoid that deadly plague.
God said, make the plague, the angel that's causing all this death, pass over.
And by the way, yeah, pass over. And by the way, that's an interesting point too, because God twice has said, I am going to go among the people. But then, Bob, as you just said, it's an angel of death comes. So do you have anything to say about that? Is it God? Is it the angel of death? How does that work?
Well, there's a lot of manifestations of the second person of the Trinity. I tend to think this is the second person of the Trinity.
Who's sometimes called the angel of the Lord.
A lot of times he is. It's kind of like with Joshua sitting in his tent before the Battle of Jericho, and this person stands in the tent. I think that's the second person of the Trinity.
Yes.
As well.
Wow. Interesting.
So, I think he appears more often than he's given credit for. Now, there will be times, and I think there are times, when a real angel called the angel of the Lord does appear. But I think this is important enough to where the second person of the Trinity appears. That's my opinion.
Interesting. All right. So chapter 12, we talked about it before. In verse 12, God says, I will pass through the land of Egypt on that night and will strike all the firstborn in the land of Egypt, both man and beast, and against all the gods of Egypt I will execute judgment. I am the Lord. So this is very powerful. I mean, we've said all along the plagues were a polemic, an argument against the gods of Egypt, and here is a very explicit statement of that to say, listen, I'm doing this to show you not only that I'm the Lord, but they're not.
I think there's an important point to make here, too, and I make it as many times as I possibly can when I'm teaching the Old Testament. Look at verse 9 of chapter 12. Notice it says, do not eat it raw or boiled with water. Why? Because that's how pagans eat it. And I see this over and over again in the Old Testament, folks. And I'm going to use a Texanism here. The Lord is essentially telling the Israelites, I don't want one smidgen of paganism in the worship of me. That's
right.
What the Lord says.
Right.
Yeah. He says that in different ways over and over again, because what's the temptation?
Yeah.
Let me use a big word. Syncretism.
Absolutely.
You know, yes, I'm going to believe in Jesus for everlasting life, but you know, to cover my bases, I think I'm going to believe Buddha as well. And that's, unfortunately, I think a lot of syncretism is going on right now, even within the church.
So in verse 6, God instructed them to take this unblemished lamb, to kill it at twilight, and then take some of the blood, verse 7, put it on the doorposts of their house. And in verse 13, he says, when he comes in the land of Egypt, the blood will be a sign for you on the houses where you are, so you'll know where the Jewish houses are. And when I see the blood, I'll pass over you, hence the word Passover, like Bob was saying. And the plague of having your firstborn killed, shall not be on you to destroy you when I strike the land of Egypt.
Mm-hmm.
So the angel or God or the second person of the Trinity will see the blood on the door and will pass over and not kill the people inside.
Right. Let me go back to verse 11 just to point a couple of things out, too. It says, you shall eat it with your belt on your waist, your sandals on your feet, your staff in your hand, like you're ready to travel.
Which they need to be.
Which they need to be really quick. And so you shall eat it at haste, It is the Lord's Passover, and it uses the Hebrew word even used today, Pasach, for Passover. And that same word is used in verse 13 when it says, I will pass over you. So what he's doing is he's connecting this ritual that he's calling the Lord's Pasach, Passover, with the action that he's going to take.
Yeah.
Passing over the houses of the Israelites that have blood on the door.
Yeah.
Symbolism is incredible here.
Right.
But he's also very clear. One of the interesting things about pagan worship is that a lot of times in pagan practice, they want something from the god or goddess. And so they're going to try to manipulate or con that particular god or goddess into doing what they want to do. And so they'll say, okay, let's try this, whatever it is. Let's, sacrifice a rabbit.
Yeah.
Well, that didn't work. What do we do now? Well, let's try a lamb. Well, right. That didn't work. What do we do now?
Right.
Let's sacrifice a human. See if that works. In other words, they don't know how to worship the Lord or what it's going to... Here, how clear is this? This is a long... Chapter 12 is a long chapter. There's a reason why. The Lord doesn't... There's no guesswork. The Lord is saying, this is how you worship me.
Yeah.
There are no scary areas that you need to go into. There's nothing. I'm going to give you direct commands. You will do it this way. There are 613 commandments in the Old Testament.
Right.
You know what I call that? Grace. Because I don't have to guess.
Okay.
The Israelites did not have to guess as to what's the right way to worship the Lord.
Yeah.
But the pagans did.
Right.
And I thought that was interesting. All the detail that you see here in chapter 12 is by design,
right,
to avoid that fuzziness that you see in pagan worship.
Sure. I heard a preacher say recently, or point out recently, that the Israelites here who put the blood of the lamb on the doorposts of their house, we don't really know what they were feeling, what they were experiencing on the inside. And this preacher was saying he could imagine some of these families were just trembling in their boots because they didn't know what was going to happen.
Right.
And maybe the Egyptians would come and kill them. And he imagined also other families would have just been rejoicing in their salvation and feeling totally serene and totally safe. And he pointed out and he said, but it didn't matter how people felt. What mattered was that they were covered with the blood. And irrespective of how they might have been doubting, mm-hmm, or if they're happy or if they're depressed or if they're nervous or whatever, the blood covered them and they did not die.
Let me reword that a little bit.
Yes, please.
Regardless of how the people felt, the people that were saved obeyed,
okay,
what the Lord said.
Yeah.
You're saying the same thing. This concept of obedience, it's overwhelming in the Old Testament. I can point out many places in the Old Testament where the Lord is just telling his people, just do what I tell you to do, and I'll bless you.
Yeah.
It's that easy. And he doesn't make you guess as to what he is talking about. He points out all these things that need to be done. You do them, you're blessed. There's no guesswork. Therefore, there's no pagan thing that that's the other thing. The pagans thought you could con these gods and goddesses into doing your own will. We cannot con God into doing what we want him to do.
I still remember when you're talking about this, Elijah and the prophets of Baal. Elijah is mocking them and says, maybe your God's on a break, or right, maybe he's in the bathroom. Why don't you cut yourself? And so they start cutting themselves. Because they're thinking, well, maybe if we draw some of our own blood.
Nothing else has worked up there now. Yeah. See, I think that's an important concept, not only for the Israelites in the Old Testament, but for us. I mean, there's all kinds of pagan beliefs out there now.
Sure.
It may not be the same kind as the gods and goddesses that we see in Egypt and other places, but there are certainly gods and goddesses that we want to mix our worship. Yes, I want to worship the Lord, but, this other thing over here looks really good.
Well, I wonder if things are different now, though, because, you mentioned, the 613 commandments, and you said that was grace. But I think Paul would say, actually, that was a curse because no one actually obeyed. It was heavy. No one obeyed these laws, right, and all they got were the curses, and they couldn't be justified by all the laws of Moses. So this was like a burden on them that could only kill them and curse them. Grace was actually being saved despite their disobedience, don't you think? Or what, is there a role for that here?
Yeah, but it seems like, Paul says in Galatians that the law was leading them to Messiah.
Right.
And so it seems to me the fact that they recognize what you were saying, you had people who recognized, Abraham recognized this, Moses recognized this. David recognized this. When you read Hebrews 11,
right.
you see there were a lot of Jewish people that were living for eternal reward, and they were right. living for the coming kingdom, and they knew they would be in it.
Right.
But there were also a lot of people like Jesus when he interacted with the Pharisees. The Pharisees were very legalistic.
Paul says it was a tutor to lead us to Christ so that we can be justified by faith.
Right. right.
So it was like the law is there to show you that you can't be saved by your works.
But it still did that in the Old Testament prior to the cross. In other words, not only was it doing it during the ministry of Jesus, right, or now today where people are seeing, hey, I can't save myself, but the truth is that was also taking place at the time of Abraham, Moses, David, Adam and Eve, all the way through.
The Lord wanted his people to obey him, and if they obeyed, he blessed.
Right.
That's the way it was in the Old Testament, like you say, in all these different ages, David, Moses, Abraham, everything's based on belief. You know, that's what he wants us to do. But once we believe, there is this thing called obedience through which we get the blessing.
See, I like this, Sean, because it's not either or. It's not we either obey God and we're legalistic and we can't be born again, or we disobey God and we believe in coming Messiah and we have everlasting. No, it's both and. We have to believe in the coming Messiah to have everlasting life, but that still doesn't eliminate the blessing and cursing theme that's all the way through, not just the Old Testament, but the New Testament.
Yeah, I can't get around in 1 John, there is a sin unto death.
Right.
I mean, I can live an unfaithful life and the Lord has to discipline me
right.
in some way.
Right.
I've seen it happen.
Well, we haven't yet come to the point where the curse is actually applied, and you see that in verse 29. And finally, Pharaoh says, get out of here.
Go away.
Go
away. Everything, including your animals.
But even that is not going to be totally final if you know the story. Pharaoh's going to change his mind again. And I don't know, I feel like we need to do one more show because I feel like there's still some stuff we need to untangle and unpack and discuss here. So keep on listening, and we'll see you guys next time.
Thank you, gentlemen, for that great discussion. Did you miss an episode of Grace and Focus that you really wanted to hear? Just come to faithalone.org. That's faithalone.org. And we have all our past episodes right there on the site. In addition to this, we have all kinds of other free resources available for you. It's all designed to help you mature and grow in your understanding of Scripture. So come visit us at faithalone.org. That's faithalone.org. On this program, we keep our requests for financial partners to a minimum. But if you are interested in becoming a financial partner with Grace in Focus, you can find out how to do that also at faithalone.org. Our team is really great about answering questions, comments, and feedback. If you've got some, we hope to hear from you. Let me give you our email address so you can do just that. It's radio@faithalone.org. That's radio@faithalone.org. On the Tuesday edition of Grace in Focus, we're going to conclude our series, The Ten Plagues of Egypt. So join us for that. I'm Lucas Kitchen with Grace Evangelical Society. And until next time, let's keep Grace in Focus.
The proceeding has been a listener-supported ministry from the Grace Evangelical Society.